Hello and welcome to a new episode of Code and Beyond, a podcast where we talk about software development and anything beyond that. Today, I'm here with my friend Alex and special guest Robin Farah. Welcome, Robin.
Hello, welcome. I mean, oh my God, thanks for having me.
Robin has been working as a project manager for more than 5 years, so we have invited her today to talk about a bit about her role and how project managers can help to guide a technical product in the right direction. But first of all, could you introduce yourself, Robin?
Yes, so I'm Robin. Thanks for having me. I'm originally from South Africa, hence the weird accent, and I currently work as a product manager in Live, which is part of Babbel. It's a little product in a part of Babbel where you go to online learning classes. Before that, I was a hardware product manager or product owner at Native Instruments, which is a music company, and we used to build music hardware equipment, so DJ equipment, keyboards, stuff like that. Before that, I used to run in different engineering teams where we would build bespoke prototypes and products to solve problems in South Africa. This would be for governments, for different sorts of companies. So my background has mainly been in hardware up until recently working for Babbel, where it's been software based.
How would you describe the work of a project manager?
I would say it really depends on the type of style that you take. I'm very much what you call like one of these like servant leaders. Going on to saying I'm not a huge fan of all these terms, but this is definitely one I relate to, which is where your team is essentially the core of building a product and making it possible. So you're the person that's managing this product. You're helping the team build this product, and you do whatever they need to get what they need out the door. You also obviously prioritize things, saying this is what we need to get out the door. This is what it should look like. You make all sorts of overarching decisions like that. You would also have an overview of, if you have this product, what does this look like from the business aspect? What does this look like from the user side? What does this look like from the technical side? And having this full overview of everything. But the big thing for me is your team and how you manage your team in order to get this product out the door. And from my perspective, it's very much, what does the team need and how can I support them to deliver what they need to deliver?
You're talking about your team all the time. And one thing that I'm always curious about the project managers and project owners is like, how did you manage the priorities? How did you decide, okay, this thing should go first and this thing is not super important? A lot of your work is about convincing people, right? Because if you talk to a developer, if you talk to me, my highest priority is going to be something like technical depth, right?
Yeah, of course.
But if you talk to the stakeholders, probably it's going to be the next shiny feature that marketing wants to deliver.
Yeah.
How do you find the balance in there? That I'm super curious about that.
So I guess it is an interesting role where you've got to essentially have like your fingers in all these pies. You need to have an insight in the business side, the engineering side, the user side, everything like that. And you have to understand, what is the point of this product? What part of this product's life are we in? Is it a brand new product where we're trying to validate, is it worthwhile being in the market? Is it a product where we need to get more users because we're not getting an influx of users? It might be something like, why is our product running slow? We need to then focus on things like tech debt or scalability of the product. Maybe we need new features because we're not meeting users' needs. So you have to continuously have this full overview of where your product's sitting, where it's sitting in the market compared to competitors. And this has a heavy play on how you prioritize. I'm extremely data-driven. So you get two types of data. Sorry if I'm like going too low level here, but maybe some of the listeners don't know, but you get qualitative data, which is more user feedback. Like, users are super happy with our product, or users are complaining. They're complaining because it's loading really slowly, and when they click on things, it often breaks. Or they really love our product. However, they would love to see a feature where like maybe there's a shopping basket that saves. So every time they come to their profile, it's there. You also get quantitative data. This is numbers. This is stuff like, we can see where users are clicking. We can see the load time of the screen. So we don't need users' feedback. We can see the exact numbers. It loads this amount on this platform. We can see that once a screen's loaded, it takes on average 5 seconds for a user to interact. those are the types of things that I've also taken me like, why is it taking a minute for a screen to load? Why is it taking users 2 minutes to interact? What's going wrong? This isn't normal. And so I would generally take that sort of feedback as well as all the other things like business, engineering, everything, and see what can have the highest impact and what is the most effort, and then start prioritizing there. I'm very much a team player, or at least I like to think I am. I'm fully aware that I'm a lot better at networking and knowing various stakeholders. I'm not an expert in these areas. So being able to have all your fingers in these pies to work to your advantage, you've got to actually say like, hey, you're an expert in engineering. Tell me, from your point of view, what's going on with the product here? How can we improve that? And effort-wise, do you think it's worth it for the amount of impact that's going to have? Similarly, you can speak to someone from the business side or marketing side. And it's those sorts of things that you've got to sit and like prioritize and be like, this should come here, this should come here. You then get a curveball, everything gets thrown out the window, you have to do something new. So it's a very exciting role. And you also try shelter that from your team as much as possible so they know what they're working on. And if there's a shift, like you were saying, you wouldn't really be convinced to work on some things. The big role of being managers, whether it's a product owner, a project manager, a product manager, or an engineering manager, is to make it as transparable as possible, transparent as possible to your team. And be like, it's very slowed loading. The experience is bad for a user. Put yourself in the user's shoes. And then the team would be like, right, we should work on that then. We don't need to work on all this other stuff. So that's also the key, is framing it in the way of, how would you feel if you're experiencing this? Can you see the data? Can you see all the feedback we're getting? Long answer.
No, it totally makes sense to me, because I really like when I see my efforts going in one direction, like that aligns with the product, right? It's like, okay, we have this issue here. We are not getting enough users, and that's the reason why we are going to fix this bug or improve performance for this specific query or whatever. So from my technical point of view, it's like, yeah, I really like that kind of managers that teach me why, or show me why we need to code this thing or forget about that one that you really like, but yeah, it's not going to bring much to the product. So yeah, totally agree.
Is there any tricks or advices or techniques that you use to create this transparency, to transfer the knowledge that you have? You mentioned that you have this overarching picture of the product for engineers, for developers. Might not be that clear, so they might see just tiny part of this whole picture. And in order to convince them, so to say, it's easier to convince if they know bigger picture. And to do this, you have to teach them, you have to share somehow what you know about this product. And then it's easier to just to mention that, you know, we are working on this feature, or there is this problem, and they will jump on it because they understand this big picture, they understand what needs to be done.
Yeah.
Do you have any advices how to, I don't know, make it better, how to boost this process of knowledge exchange between people on the team?
Yeah, of course. I mean, if you think about OKRs, which is quite a common tool that companies use now, which is essentially measuring what is your vision for this year? What are you aiming towards? That's quite a well-known concept to be like, what is our aim? Is it acquisition? Is it retention? And then you can say to the team, what should we work on in our product to actually go make sure we get a higher retention with our users? So that's one way. The other way is KPIs, which is more actually looking at metrics like, we want our loading time to be better. How do we improve our loading time? Obviously, everyone speaks different languages, and I don't mean like actual languages, but I mean we all communicate very differently.
Yes.
So even though I might say to you like, hey, our loading time in these numbers on the data here is not good, you might be like, I really don't care. And another person, you might actually want to hear users complaining about it. So you better try to get as much of that information as possible. Always communicate to the team. Constantly repeat, like, these are subscribers, we're trying to get to here. And it's just a continuous thing where it's actually really funny, because when you're thinking like, okay, our next thing is like retention, and you slowly start introducing this thing like retention, and the next thing you know, you're in meetings and people are like, yes, and we've got to do retention, and they say it like as if it's something that like they believe and they've come up with themselves, and you're like, good, they're getting into this. And it's very much that like slowly introducing it, getting people to understand, be on board, and then also start speaking that language and being like, I get it, I get the data, I get that side. And it's just painting that picture and asking people, do you understand? Do you see where it's coming? Obviously, this is very ideal. Pablo and I have worked together. It's a lot more fast-paced than that. So a lot of the time you're like, hey, I need you to work on this. We've got a huge problem. And so I think the ideal world is that you're constantly trying to do like, we are X subscribers. We're trying to get to this many. Our attention's this amount. We want to bring it up to this amount. And that's where the OKRs essentially come in.
I'm convinced.
Good, good. I answered right.
Yeah, the only problem that I usually find in some places is that there is no time to plan. So you are in a firefighting mode, or I call it like reactive mode. It's like everything is super high priority. Everything is on fire, and it's not much time to plan or think about stuff in general. How did you handle those situations?
So I mean, I am definitely one of these people that. I don't like pressure. So if I have a task, I will not leave it to the last minute. But if something comes to me, like recently when we had Black Friday, we had a huge influx of users. And we're like, right, suddenly everything shifted within 30 minutes. And I was like, yes, I am ready to take this on. And I thrive in those situations. Like I'm happy. That's where I work most effective. So there's that side that it's just a personality type, I think. Yeah. The other thing is I love planning ahead. So I love knowing what's coming in the next year, what's going on. But because there's always these shifts, there's only so much that you can plan with knowing things are going to be shifting, especially if you're agile. So like you've got to be more lenient. But it kind of means that you have an overarching idea of multiple projects or things that could happen that you could step into and pick up. So if you suddenly need to pick something up, you might have hopefully thought about this before. Obviously, firefighting, when things happen like that, that's more when it's like, okay, you need to just hone in on that. The other thing is, at least from my experience, you try to hide a lot of the stuff from the team. So for example, if you have quarterly planning coming up, you don't want the team to be in all this decision-making and understanding. So you will do hours of work, like, for like weeks or months coming up to that, speak to all the other teams that you know, but you also want your team to have a say. So you'll sit down with the team and do a workshop on, as you know, these are our OKRs for the year. These are our goals. What are your suggestions to do it, to meet these goals? But you've obviously spoken to the team, you're working with them. So you have a vague idea of they're most likely going to go this route. I've already spoken to these teams. They're already on board if we take that route. So you've kind of like pre-put things on a table, and it's happens very often that everyone in the team is on a similar mindset. So for example, if you say something like, we can work on anything this quarter, but you've been talking about how the loading time's really bad, at least 70% of the team will be like, we need to work on loading time. And it seems like you as the PM have said nothing. And they're like, we came up with this, we are so keen to work on it. And you're like, okay, if you insist, we will. I will ask the other teams if they have capacity, but you've already asked them, so they're ready. And that's essentially like how you want it to work. And I mean, it's not that you want to trick people, because you're giving people the possibility to bring whatever they want to the table. But to me, it is key to not have to have your team wasting time thinking about all these things, but rather when they are given the chance to decide, they're coming with decisions. And hopefully it is in the way that they like, I'm fully aware of the data. I'm aware of our goal. And so I know where I want to go. I hope I answered your question, because I was like quite vague. But that's the planning just happens continuously over time. And the firefighting is just the attitude. I think some people can't do it personality-wise. I think some people can freak out. Then from the technical side, I mean, that's when you come in. I can't answer how you handle that.
I'm in line with you. It depends on personality. Some people are really good at firefighting and they handle pressure really well. Other people just, they cannot do it and they freak out. That's my experience. But now it looks like project management is like it's about planting a seed in people's brain. So you just deliver a concept or something that you think is good for the team, or you think it's part of the team goals, leave it in there, leave it grow, and at some point the team will get there, right?
To a certain extent, I mean, I've made it sound more like, I mean, you can see this as a very, on the very like corrupt, I don't know, I'm thinking of like governments or something side where they're leaving the seed, but it's in a much more positive way where you're giving, being transparent, giving the full overview.
Yeah.
But obviously, if someone wants to spend as much time looking at the data, they might pick up other things that a PM's not even picking up. So obviously, we pick up things and we're like, ooh, red flag. And so we try to present that to you. And so it's only normal that if we're continuously presenting like, this is concerning, you're going to be like, can we work on that?
Yeah.
It works perfectly when team is work together for quite some time already. So people kind of synchronize with each other with their minds. So it's much faster. They could talk to each other much faster, or they could understand each other much faster. Then it's enough just to present the problem, just to give introduction, and they already know what to do. So then it doesn't look like manipulation. You just say, okay, we have this on horizon, and people understand right away, okay, we need to fix this issue, or we need to introduce this feature, or do something. Like, we have to go toward this goal. There is no need to convince or manipulate.
Yes, it does sound like manipulation, but you're completely right. And I think that's when it feels like you're speaking the same language. You're all on the same level. But I have to say, if you're doing discovery, you should not just use people in your team, because you're all thinking the exact same thing. You all come up with the exact same solutions. So you need to pull completely different people in and be like, we have this problem, what do you think? Or we want to create something new, what do you think? The team will be thinking on the same wavelength, so you need completely different people, and then that's obviously why you do user research as well. I have to say, coming from hardware, anything in software is like a breeze, because minimum is 24 months. So when people are like, we're going to build this, I'm like, how long? 6 months. I'm like, oh, that is fast. It's like, everyone else is like, why can't we have it next week? And I'm like, but it's 6 months. What's the problem? Trust the dev. The dev said 6 months.
So in hardware, everything is slower than in software.
Yeah, because you have equipment. You have to test the equipment. You might have different types of tools. You can't quickly see a prototype on your screen. You know, you've got to build it. You've got to see which one's the best. You've got to think. Then something new's built. You've got to get it shipped to you. Then you get it manufactured, usually in China. So unless you're living there, it's still far away. Like, there's a lot of things. And then with hardware comes software, which I always find it funny, because when people are like, oh, you've worked in hardware, I'm like, but you know there's software with hardware, right? Like, yeah. There's no hardware that's alone. And they're like, oh, so you do have software experience. I'm like, kind of, but it's always been alongside hardware.
When you produce hardware, it's also the price of a failure or mistake is much higher, right? It's impossible to fix, right? So you have to be a lot more careful. That's why it takes time.
Yeah, I mean, so for example, if you're building a product and you tend to do something called injection molding to do like the actual casing of the product. And it's cheaper if you order 500,000 of this product, because then it brings the price down. It's cheaper to sell, blah, 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 blah. And you have to have 500,000 to just test this product in the market to make it at a price you want to do. It's taken you 24 months until you get the physical device. You put it in the market and not one sells. You've just wasted 24 months of everyone's time, that money. And you've also had to do a minimum of 500,000 orders. So it's a very, very risky thing. And a lot of companies, particularly if they want to innovate, they will start getting onto that topic. They'll do like one or two prototypes, get excited. And then when you paint the bigger picture, they're like, oh, no, 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 I'm okay. I think we build an app. Everyone loves apps.
Yeah, it sounds much easier.
It just depends. Yeah.
I guess I would love to know, because I mean, I'm assuming both of you have always worked with project managers, and what kind of styles have you seen? What experiences have you really enjoyed from the various project managers that you've had?
I really like the ones that are data-driven, because they kind of speak my engineering language. It's like, we are going to do this because here's the data. And if we do this, this factor here is going to increase or decrease. And the reason why we're doing it. I don't like when it's like just the feeling. Like, we have the feeling that if we do this, the product is going to grow. It's like, meh. Not sure about that. I also like to have enough freedom to make decisions. Technical level is like, yeah, I don't like when I have someone telling me, okay, this has to be done in this way or this other way. It's like, okay, in theory, I'm the expert, so I should be the one providing the expertise. Yeah, in general, I usually get along quite well with managers in general. I haven't had any issue in the past or anything like that.
But I guess there's a subset of qualities, right, that you value or something you don't like. I could give my example. I think it's not just about project and product managers, but work and team in general, with leaders. I really appreciate transparency. Hmm. I do not like when people try to manipulate, even in light version of it. Just tell me what's the problem and then trust me that I will do my best to provide the best solution. And the best, I mean, in terms that it's good for everyone, not just for me. I will be proud that as a software developer, I did this awesome thing. Maybe it's useless for users, but it was so challenging and so cool to do for me. So no, it should be cool for everyone and make the user happy, because that's the only thing which counts. But I think it's usually easy to sense this manipulation. And then personally, I don't trust them anymore. So it's not healthy work relationship, I think. Micromanagement and these kind of things, it's also, I think if you, like on the team is relatively small, everyone brings some level of expertise, right? Everyone is expert in certain area. So we should trust each other and yeah. Then it will be work. Then it will be like healthy environment and the whole team would work as a one mechanism.
Exactly. And I think going back to saying to you earlier, like, I feel like I've got my finger in a lot of pies, so I have a good overview of most things, but I can't tell you how to develop something. I can't tell you what's going on with the tech debt half the time. I need the devs to say, like, look, we can't do our work unless we fix this. And it's like, okay, but then we can't have a product unless you can do your work. So I heavily rely on that. I heavily rely on not knowing anything, you know, almost anything, and being like, you're the expert. And I hate micromanaging. So if I end up having to be like, hey, what exactly is going on with that thing that you were doing? And it puts me in such a bad mood. It makes the relationship bad. And I think to me, like whenever I felt I'm micromanaging, it also comes down to communication and like this lack of transparency again, of not telling people what's going on. And it works both ways, because everyone in a team gets absorbed in their own world. But no, I completely agree. You hire people. And obviously, you've got people at different skill levels. But it's not for a PM to train a junior dev on what to do. That's, you know, they can be like, hey, nice to see you. This is our priority. Please chat to this developer on what you should pick up next. That's as far as it goes, as far as I'm concerned.
I think you're totally right. I agree. Yeah, I just realized that one thing, at least for me, it's like I handle really bad internal pressure coming from my team. I can cope with external pressure, no problem. Everything is on fire because, I don't know, server went down, anything like that. I'm totally fine. But if I have internal pressure, then I cannot cope with it, because people in my team, they don't trust me. They don't trust my work. And then, yeah, I cannot deal with that.
I'm the same as you. I'm such a people person. That it's kind of that when someone doesn't trust me or they feel like they're reprimanding me, it's not a happy environment. You don't want to be there. And you have to spend 8 hours a day with these people.
Yeah, too much time.
Exactly.
And what about the other way around, Robin? What did you like to see in a developer?
For me, with anyone I work with, like, communication's key. Even if someone is like, I don't know what I'm doing. Like, that's actually probably one of the best answers. When someone's like, I don't know what I'm doing, I'm stuck. You're like, thank you. Because let's figure out what you don't know. Let's break it down. But communication with anyone. I hate it when people are silent and then you have to be like, hey, did you get my message? Still no response. Finally get them in a call and they're like, yo, but I didn't know what to say. And you're like, why didn't you say that? So communication, number one. I think, like, Yeah, it obviously depends on the different skill level, but you can obviously tell when someone, particularly with a developer, is at a different level, because they will start doing documentation. They'll start clearly basically outlining what they've done, because they've clearly been in the position where they've had to pick up someone else's code. And this you can tell because they like will outline things as if I'm not here tomorrow or if I come back in 6 years, I will want to know what's going on here. And they don't see it as a waste of time. They see it as actually saving time for the future. So that's one of my favorite things. But that's a different skill level. I think it just comes with years of practice. I can't say anything else. I do like it when people have a banter in my team. I like having jokes and fun as well.
How you prefer to discuss technical aspects of something?
All the time, but I have to say it's usually that I'm the one who's like, I don't know what you're talking about. Like with the developers, they're like, but this isn't a blah, blah, blah. And then I'm like, I don't know what you're speaking about. So from my perspective, I'll say, what is the implication if we don't fix this? What is the impact if we do fix this? And how much effort is it? Basically breaking it down into that. And I'm very happy I've right now got our team to think in those terms so that they know they can't just pick up everything. They've got to be like, okay, these three things. But I'm usually feel like I'm in that position. When it's the other way around and I know I have to chat to devs or there's something going on, that's when you pull the engineering manager in. Engineering manager equals I can speak the two languages in the room. It's not, there's no pressure on the developer to have to translate this. It's for the engineering manager to be like basically, and Pablo has probably seen this a lot of the time, if the engineering manager's in the room and they do tech talks, like they're just going on, I will start doing like work and then it's like, hey, Robin. And I'm like, sorry, what? I was not listening. And they'll be like, no, we just need to tell you if we don't do this, the system's going to crash completely. And then I'm like, okay, cool. You got my thumbs up. And that's basically what I do. Pull engineering manager in. He speaks both languages.
Yeah.
Or she, sorry, he or she. In my case, it's a he right now. That's why.
It's so awesome that you mentioned this phrase. I think it's just pure gold. If you don't understand something, just say, I do not understand at all what you're saying. Could you rephrase and say it again? Or maybe draw a picture, like boxes and arrows. It's the best thing. And it's super hard for some people to understand that. Yes, it's fine that what you say, maybe it's super clear for you, but other people might not understand like at all what you are saying. and in other way around, if you don't understand something, just say it. Sometimes it's also necessary to guide people, like to help them to help you.
Exactly.
I was multiple times in situation when I say like, I don't understand what you mean. And then people, they just repeat the same phrase once again, maybe a little bit louder. It doesn't help. And then you have to guide them and say, like, you know, could you just change words or could you explain this differently? And then they, okay. And then maybe ask them to draw this thing. So, but it took me, I know for sure that it took me some time to learn this, that I actually have to actively help people to help me to understand what they want.
Yes, it's so true. I feel like I always say the phrase, like, talk to me like I'm an enthusiastic 11-year-old. So assume I know nothing, but I want to know. And then it's like, oh, because at least from my experience, and I think this is any skill that people learn. If you're a junior, you're new to this, and you're suddenly like, you're this beginner, it's new to you. So you're very enthusiastic to pass this info on to someone, you can still walk through that experience. You then get this like mid-range where they've forgotten what that feels like, but they don't know how to communicate that to other people. And they're like, but how can you not know what I mean? And you're like, seriously, like you weren't born knowing how to do this, explain. And then I think that's the difference when you get someone who's higher, because they completely understand. You're not, maybe it's comes, you should get this arrogance of, you're not at the level where I am. Let me explain this to you like you're a child. But essentially, I find that is the difference with working people. Hence why you can pull an engineering manager in, because they immediately know. She does not know. Robin does not know what you were talking about. So let me translate.
It also happens with devs all the time. When you arrive at a new company, a new code base, new domain, and even if you're senior or whatever, you have experience, you arrive in a new project, you're lost, totally lost. You know your language, You know how, you still know how to code, but you don't know the domain. You don't know the tricky part of the code base. You know nothing, and you have to ask around. And yeah, the people start to throw terms at you, like, okay, this is coming from here, here, and there. And I, okay, fine, but I'm still lost.
And everything's abbreviations in companies for some reason.
Yeah. Oh, I hate abbreviations. I'm not a native English speaker, so it's even worse.
From my perspective, I abbreviate everything because I'm having to explain, for example, I don't know, I can't think of an abbreviation now, but if I have to explain like the cooking chicken method or something, and I have to write this to like 50 stakeholders a day, I abbreviate that because I'm like, I cannot keep typing this. You are now just knowing it as like whatever the abbreviation is for the cooking chicken method. So like, I think that's probably how abbreviations come up, is the rest of us are like, I cannot type this word all the time.
Thank you very much, Robin, for joining us today. It was great. Great episode.
Thank you so much for having me. This was so much fun.
Maybe we can do another one about hardware in the future. Who knows?
I would love to.
I think that's it for today. Thank you for listening. In case of any questions, simply send us an email at code.beyond@protonmail.com. You will also find the address in the show notes. If you are listening to our show on Spotify, don't forget to leave us a rating. Keep being amazing. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.